Hello and welcome to Podcast on Fire, and this has no number, it's a backup show. It's an episode called An Autumn's Tale. Yes, it's me back continuing my top 10 Hong Kong movies coverage, originally posted on the A Hero Never Dies blog as part of his series of favorite Hong Kong movies from different bloggers, but I'm doing it more in verbal and extensive form. And we've done, way back when, already, Scared Stiff and Red to Kill as audio commentaries. And we'll do, at the time of recording, maybe we've done so at the when you listen to this, but we will do at the time of recording The Cat on the director's series, the finale to the director's series, at one point. And in this mini-series so far, I've covered Once Upon a Time in Triad Society and the sequel, because you gotta cover the sequel despite it not being on my top 10 list. I've been jumping all over the list in the process too, but you know what? It's time for the top Hong Kong movie of all time for me personally. The one I put at number one, and I didn't have to think long and hard about that. And it's Mabel Jeong's 1987 romance, An Autumn's Tale, starring Chow Yun-fat and Sherry Chung. It doesn't get much better than this. And my name is Kinnaby, and I cried during this, what probably was my 12th or 13th viewing of the film, and I will probably do so for the remainder of the viewings throughout my life. So you'll hear some more details of cast and crew and my views of the movie after the contact information. You are listening to Podcast on Fire at the Podcast on Fire Network. The website is podcastonfire.com with this and all the other shows. Email for feedback, podcastonfire@googlemail.com. The old forum that is now closed, podcastonfire.com/forum. All members still have access to the wonderful members-only archive of cut conversations and exclusive content. But whenever we do exclusive content nowadays, extra content, we post those as bonus episodes on the website. Those are extra podcasts that will only be available on podcastonfire.com, not on iTunes, not on Stitcher, so make sure to get them there. We also have some endeavors on Facebook, like our page, facebook.com/POF Network, and join the discussion group that you can reach by typing in Podcast on Fire Network in the Facebook search bar, or just follow the link that is on the facebook.com/POF Network page. And follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. Follow my writing, sogoodreviews.com, and my video reviewing at sleazykvideo.com. I mix all kinds of movies. I try to get a drama in there every now and again, but mostly it's a mix of Taiwanese movies, IFT and Filmar, cut and paste, cool horror movies, category-free movies, a mixture that I deem cool, and I hope you like it as well. And follow me on Twitter as well, twitter.com/sogoodreviews. The Podcast on Fire Network is on iTunes. You can subscribe to us via there. And if you like the show, please leave a rating and a comment. We would very much appreciate that. And if you'd like to stream your podcast as well, or instead, you can do that via Stitcher Radio. Stitcher.com is where you'll find the application for your computer. But you can also download a free application to your smartphone or tablet. And once you're in Stitcher, type in Podcast on Fire Network, and that will get you to the search result where you can add each show individually, including Podcast on Fire. So the review of An Autumn's Tale from 1987, plot from my review of the film, one of the very first reviews I ever did for my site, I think. So Jennifer, played by Sherry Chung, is a shy and a bit naive woman who, after 2 years of saving, is moving to New York to study acting. Over there, she's also going to reunite with her boyfriend Vincent, played by Danny Chan. Her family has arranged for her to live in the same apartment block as distant cousin Figgy, played by Chow Yun-fat. He explains that Jennifer is his fourth aunt's 13th niece. So I guess that's very distant. The family back in Hong Kong thinks Figgy is some kind of local leader in Chinatown and therefore rich. Upon her arrival in New York, Jennifer's life goes downhill, though. Vincent, rather, has found another woman, and Figgy is anything but rich. During the days, he works as a waiter in a restaurant, and the rest of his free time is spent at the gambling tables most of the time. Figgy is also a man who takes life one day at a time, and is happy as long as he has a roof over his head. The apartment he has set up for Jennifer is in a state of chaos, and with all these negative aspects surrounding her, she sinks into depression. The always life-affirming Figaro does what he can to cheer her up, and after a while, Jennifer finds her place in New York and in Figgy's heart. So, background. I can hear me sniveling already. I think this is touching. background. There's plenty of chai fat discussion elsewhere, like in our Seventh Curse episode as part of the director's series. So, see show links, and when you reach that show, there is actually a running time listing where you'll find each relevant discussion, including the chai fat discussion. So, go check that episode out. So, I don't need to repeat how awesome I think Chai and Fat is and still is during this episode. So let's talk of some less talked of profiles connected to this Best Picture winner at the Hong Kong Film Awards. And primarily you gotta speak of director Mabel Jung and writer Alex Law. Mabel was actually an avid sportswoman during her university days, but she got into movies, and once she did that, she started to focus on the theme of immigrants and immigrations, starting in her Shaw Brothers movie, the debut of hers, called The Illegal Immigrant. And it's continued in An Autumn's Tale, and even in the underappreciated Eight Tales of Gold, starring Sammo Hung. And she also makes movies with her husband and working partner, Alex Law, who also takes directing reins every now and again for their projects, including the award-winning Painted Faces with Sammo Hung, detailing the life of the life at the Peking Opera School for Sammo Hung, Jackie Chan, Yung Bu, and more recently Alex directed Echoes of the Rainbow, starring Simon Yam and Sandra on Alex Law. I mean, and Mabel Jung, of course, they have an incredible track record. Primarily, you know, the peak happened with An Autumn's Tale and Painted Faces, in my opinion. But their collaborations with Sammo led to directing drama scenes for Sammo's Wuxia Pian Moon Warriors, something that made that movie really classy and mature and rich on character and action. Sammo divided action, directed action, and but also handed those duties to Ching Su Dong at some points during the film. So that's a little on the directing and writing team, the constant, the directing and writing team. On the leading actress, Cherry Chung, and indeed, this is one of the top actresses of the 1980s in Hong Kong. To me, she excels at playing sexy, playful, you know, naive, wounded, you know, and everything in between, you know. And you can't help to, you know, I really do miss her, but that track record is nigh on perfect. She was born in 1960, Miss Hong Kong participant, as many were, and she debuted in Johnny To's very skilled debut, The Enigmatic Case, in 1980. She has been on screen multiple times with actor Chai Yun Fat, often in a superb way. I mean, even though movies could have been uneven, their scenes and connection and chemistry was always strong, in my opinion. Starting as early as in 1981 in An Hoi's Story of Vu Viet, and even in Ronnie Hughes' Postman Strikes Back, you tend to forget about that, I definitely did. She logged some delightful and acclaimed work at Shaw Brothers, such as in My Darling Jeannie with Derek Yee. I can't describe how hot, sexy, and lovely and delightful she is here, despite not being that kind of role. She plays the genie, and that's quite wonderful. She's in Stanley Kwan's Women, again with Chai Yun Fat. But post Shaw Brothers, you'll find classic upon classic, really. She's in Choi Hawk's Peking Opera Blues, Goodbye Darling, where Raymond Wong is her husband. Spiritual Love, again with Chow, and Autumn's Tale, of course. Eighth Happiness, the Lunar New Year, Madness, again with Chai Yun Fat, directed by Johnny To, and one of the finest ones outside of An Autumn's Tale in terms of their collaborations, Chai Yun-Fat and Sherry Chomes, is A Wild Search, Ringo Lam's take on Peter Weir's Witness. That's only mentioning a few classics here. She retired from acting in the early 90s with a final Chow Yun-Fat collaboration in John Woo's action comedy Once a Thief. And that, of course, co-starred Leslie Cheung. She subsequently married advertising guru Mike Chu in 1991, who, unfortunately, Mike Chu, that is, died of stomach cancer in 2007. And today, apparently, promotes environmental protection. So she's out there in some shape or form, officially, and in the spotlight, if you will. And as much as you miss her, you can't ask for a better track record, so she should be very proud, and I hope she is. So, on to the review and discussion of specific scenes I like. And this will cover a lot of the movie, but won't be as filled with spoilers, at least not in my opinion. So I hope if you want to go in clean, do watch the movie. It's on Blu-ray. You can probably find the DVD still out there, a remastered one. And so go for it. Go watch An Autumn's Tale and come back. And is there a better example of a simple romantic template that is still rich on character depth and thought in world cinema than this? I would like to see it, but for now, this is the best romance I've ever seen. The best Hong Kong movie of all time is this one. And it's not really hugely a romantic, well, of course, it's a romantic movie, but not a movie focused on the romance all throughout. It's more of a life-affirming movie. Mabel Cheung combines the utmost control of story beats, great handling of hard-working stars with that always special connection on screen, fantastic location work that is always interesting when it comes to Hong Kong movies, when they try to expand their stories by going abroad, but not in a forced hip way, if you will. There is a perfectly complimentary piano score by Lowell Low, and it's always perfect, this movie, for me. It's engaging, it's funny, it's astonishing when always taking in the presence and charisma of the stars that are clearly more comfortable doing this rather than action material, more relating to Chow Yun-Fat than anyone else. I can go on and on. And another review called it a great date movie, and unless subtitles is an issue for you, I couldn't agree more, as this is a classic movie in the world cinema. If you look at it in world cinema, this is a classic movie and not just a classic Hong Kong movie. And going into the movie from the beginning, really, and explaining characters and events and what have you, and looking at Jennifer when she goes to New York, filled with enthusiasm. So going into a little bit more details and scenes and events in the movie and themes and what have you. But beforehand, also great for Jennifer before her world falls down. And, among other things, obviously Chow Yun-Fat is not the character that the family back in Hong Kong thinks that he is. Maybe he was at one point, but definitely not anymore. And it all turns, the more everything falls down, the world turns dark for Jennifer, and so the movie is dealing with the darkness for this character, and he's not afraid to go there. And once in New York, I mean, there's just tons of iconic moments here. And entrance of the car picking her up is obviously the first ominous sign, and at the same time, it's a fantastic entrance for the entire being of Chow Yun-Fat. And some reviews said that Chow Yun-Fat does not look as handsome as we used to, and while certainly true with the stubble, he's not shaved at all times. He isn't suave and wears fancy clothes or anything. His car is filled with graffiti. The door won't close on the car. He almost drives over a police getting out of the airport. He gets into a car joust with a Mexican gang. It's still the marvelous, handsome, charming Chow Yun-Fat here. But he is in tune with the character. He's not too pretty for a kind of low-class character, if you will. He does show complete disregard for Jennifer, though. A bit still into his, carefree world of gambling and hanging out with his friends and dealing with conflicts, such as the conflicts with the Mexican gang, apparently. But that would change. And there's lovely shots of nighttime New York as they approach the apartment in presumably Chinatown. I'm not too sure, but in a rundown neighborhood in New York. But before we get lovely shots of nighttime New York and walking shots subsequently in New York, in outside of a cinema later on in the film, it's just cool because the production made that trip. But it's not a hip move. It's a sensible and very valid story element to have it set in New York, and James Heyman captures this very well. And on the fear, on the notion of capture, there's tons of great time that moments that you want to frame here, and even lighting his cigarette via his clock is still frame and frame-worthy. So much of the movie's moments are not just involving Chiang Fat, but they're often involving him and Sherry Chung at the same time. And when Jennifer later is going to meet her boyfriend Vincent at the train station, because he's coming in from Boston, he's a baseball player. That smile of Charles and kindness when asked by Jennifer how she looks before meeting Danny Chan's Vincent, he says, you know, you look like a 10, you look like a plus. That's a movie star moment for Chow, you know. It's for me, that is. I mean, it's not much, but it is. When obviously he's seeing Vincent with another woman, you know, and Jennifer's world starts falling down, it's somewhat of a girl's, young girl's, a child's reaction to all of this, but it's also warranted because, and genuine, because by all accounts they were serious and had enough sync and clarity about their relationship. And you know, she gets into the car with Chow again, and beats like driving over and away from the clay dolls that she made for Vincent. Works perfectly. Those moments, and it's even shot in slow motion, I think. Those moments need to be done by someone sharp at the helm, and we've got that with director Mabel Cheung. And subsequently, there's a great beat when she refuses to take the call from Vincent, and Chow, who takes the call for her, kind of correctly says that she might as well give him a scolding, you know, but she doesn't want to hear all that. And despite slamming the door, she does, like a girl, come out and listen to when Chow makes dinner plans for the duo to talk, for Vincent and Jennifer to talk. But you do find out that during the restaurant scene, it does seem they aren't in sync, this couple, and have not communicated well across the world because they've been apart there. He's encouraged her to study, but not with him. So clearly, you know, this disaster has made truths and realizations come out, even though he is making excuses for himself. There is that notion that she probably, they weren't probably in sync as much as they should have been. But he is being a bit of a dick about it, and he does sink into repression in a very felt sequence, especially when in the scene where she's walking slowly around her apartment, putting the kettle on and not noticing the gas leakage. You know, she's just crying her eyes out, but moving in a slow way. And the gas leakage obviously makes her lose consciousness, all while a kind of Day of the Dead carnival goes on the street that the crew shot. So it's very kind of creepy. But it's also very real, this bout of depression, without devoting too much on it. You know, every beat is enough when it comes to Alex Law's script, where he shows that Jennifer goes from, you know, happiness to depression when things don't work out 100%. And yeah, even the fire department breaking the glass in her apartment is a good piece of symbolism. You know, it was bad before, now the department is apartment is in a mess. And by this point, obviously, Chiang Fat's character actually does a nice turnaround as he shows regard for her, for a distant relative in trouble, a human in trouble, in deep depression. And I think, as depressing as that scene is, where she doesn't notice the gas leakage, a subsequent scene where she sits by the phone and thinks the phone rings and picks up and says hello, I mean, that's just real moments, and Chow's reactions are of concern are very well played, and they both do play it very well. His technique to kind of get her out of her shell, obviously, is to get her out, but he uses hard truths, you know, tough love, like forget that jerk. You become uglier if you dwell on him. You know, you gotta forget your past and move forward. And it's a technique that she doesn't get defensive about. So it's a way in, actually a workable way in. And all of this, for talking movie structure and the script, it's clever to not hint at romance, but instead to build a human again to get her on her feet. So it's not, you know, a calculated piece. And wonderful moment. It leads to wonderful moments, like the scene of building her bookshelf. Chao helps her out. She redecorates that chaotic apartment, and it's just delightful to see two comfortable stars interact together in a positive and uplifting and building way, talking characters. I mean, even the scene where she says, like, well, the window is smashed out, too bad, because then I would have been able to see the Brooklyn Bridge. He has actually painted her the Brooklyn Bridge. And a human, he's a human who does that just because, not because he just wants to get into her pants or anything. And she speaks briefly about the fact that she wants to go see a musical on Broadway, and he says, like, well, these Broadway musicals, they're crap. But he still stands in line for her to buy a ticket to a Broadway musical, although he cuts in line. But he still does that for her, despite possibly not having the means. And at least one of those first, like, hints at Chaifat maybe falling in love with her, but also realizing that he is perhaps doing too much to her, because he comes back, and very happy. I've got your tickets, I've got your tickets. Then he's distracted by something else. I think she's cooking. And then he hides the fact and even belittles himself a little. So he feels embarrassed about the fact that he tries to hide the fact that he bought tickets. He feels embarrassed that he perhaps went too far, and that it's an obvious sign that he wants more, even though he doesn't, which is wrong. It's wrong to want more at this point, because this girl is hurting. She's trying to focus on school and money, and it's that focus. Figgy knows. Chaifat's character knows. She does see through all of this and realizes what he's done for her in a later scene, but it's all not lingered upon. It's for the sake of characters. They don't want to make their lives difficult respectively. So he realizes that, she says it, but she just smiles. It's all done for a little dialogue, looks, nothing big cinematically, and I like that subtlety, that it's very clear, but it's not too much either. So I think that's why so audiences will get this quite easily. There's, speaking of subtle, there's a nice subtle set aside moment later when Jennifer has arranged her schedule for the week, her school schedule and work schedule. She has written a huge paper that she has in her apartment. She actually has Clay dolls on her table. They are back. She's got something back that she liked to do, to feel creative. And why should she have them out of her life just because Vincent disappointed her when she brought those as a present to him? So it's a very nice subtle moment and encouraging moment. So Figgy again, he obviously feels responsible for her, but he is not really responsible for himself, kind of, because he gambles, he loses money, he goes back to zero, which is completely unhealthy slash healthy, as he takes one life one day at a time. But there's no current ambition there, and that's kind of his problem right now, that there's nothing in front of him. Maybe the fact that they are connecting as much as they do will bring out that ambition. I mean, there are moments like she has made a clay doll out of him, a lovely gesture, and with details such as the doll has playing cards in his hands. And it is a lovely gesture, because she does that just because, and with those details just because. And it shows also that they have connected with details in each other's lives. And it leads to that wonderful, delightful scene where Chaifat dresses up as best as he can to visit her at a restaurant where she works as a part-time job to get money. But he hasn't got the greatest suit, he hasn't got the behavior all down, because Andy can't probably afford all of this. And he's a bit vulnerable walking into establishments out of his range. This is not a gambling den, as he's used to, It again connects back a little to how he belittled himself in front of her by casually calling himself scum, like the dialogue goes, "Scum like me, you don't want to hang out with." And he tries, before this scene, he tries to pass himself off as more busy. Like, he says that I don't have time to visit you, I'm sorry. But he does, and it's a bit transparent. I think that act is a bit transparent, because I think she sees that he's afraid to be seen as nothing. And on that restaurant scene, where he sits by himself in the table at the table. There's like 5-6 moments of Chow's, when the character is out of his elements, not knowing how to tip, to order food, to behave, and you can see it also in him that he's not comfortable. And those are goddamn beautiful moments by Chow. No, no, not touching, just great non-verbal acting, if you will. As I said, he feels responsible for her, and rational or irrational, Figgy will explode if Jennifer is treated badly, like when the restaurant owner essentially makes her lose her babysitting job. Chow Yun-fat actually beats him up, and he cares for her a bit too much, if you will. A great, lovely moment. There are many of them, so I'm just gonna list them. Is when Chow is listening in on the song Jennifer sings to the kid she babysits over the phone, and his reaction, where the camera goes from the upper floor down to his apartment, on the floor below. His reaction is something you can't really explain. It's just how he listens, how he smiles, the positive reaction of his. Perhaps it's purely a reaction to the fact that she is giving someone comfort, that she's come a long way. But he does care for her, but he's not a yes man. Because when later on, when she sees Vincent again, she asks Figgy, how do I look compared to his new girlfriend? Am I prettier than her? And he stands firm and says, you're going into the past again. You're ugly. You're the ugliest girl on the street now. Just because, why are you comparing yourself to her? It's crap. Don't do that. Don't go into the past. And it's a time in the movie where tough love isn't working, and they kind of drift apart. But another lovely moment is the how they reconnect again is when Jennifer lowers down a kettle and on a fishing pole to the lower floor. And a note on it, asking if it's dinner time, if it's tea time, if you want to have dinner. And it kind of breaks the ice. It's just lovely. And there is tension when he goes up to her apartment, but he snaps into the fact that he wants to teach her a bit about cooking. And it's lovely to see them interact again as actors and as characters. And the nuances to cooking that he does teach is like how to throw that you have to throw salt into the food from 2 feet away, otherwise it won't be good. And at the end of the scene, by the way, for those who have seen it and those who do see it, study the end of the scene, because they sit down, drink a bit of soup or tea, and then Chow spits it out, and I think she spits it out, and I think that's an outtake, because you can see Chow when he sits down trying not to laugh before spitting out the soup, but he does. But it relieves tension and it makes sense for the scene though, so I am very convinced that it is an outtake. And if anything, this is the point and stretches of the movie where we realize as viewers that the characters both individually realize that there is something brewing here. And I spoke about the theme of immigrants, and obviously we have it here, but they speak of it more in the latter half of the movie, that they have seen on, I don't know, Staten Island, probably, possibly, or Long Island, I don't know. But they're at the beach there, regardless. And here, Chow speaks about he's been around the world, he's been a sailor, and he feels settled now. He doesn't want to go anywhere anymore. She wants to see more, but the movie obviously structures itself as that. The thought will come to her that she has possibly found her place too in a foreign land, and at this stage, finally, they do speak of Chow's character's actual dream. It actually is starting to filter through the back of his brain and to his mouth, where he talks about he wants to open a restaurant by the sea, and he doesn't want gambling to balance his mind anymore, but he wants the sea to gamble his mind, to gamble his mind, to balance his mind rather. And it always makes me cry when he has that speech about, even if I have that restaurant, my friends will probably be gone, you will probably be gone, in reference to her. But her response is that, you don't know that, I might be here. And that response is almost makes me cry, almost makes me cry talking about it, because Charles' response is one of relief. The shy boy is so relieved that it is a possibility that Jennifer will still be in his life. And it's, I mean, if anything, that is what should have gotten Chow the Hong Kong Film Award. He did win that year, but for Prison of City on Fire, I believe. But he won in Taiwan, and I think those mannerisms, those subtle mannerisms, are award worthy. Not done through much dialogue, but just staggering words. We do get some uncountable, two or three uncountable, almost kissing moments that both are aware of, but they are beautifully played, and I won't describe in detail what it is. But when they part in that scene, they've been out for the entire day; they're kind of drunk too. After that scene, when they part, you know, he goes down to his apartment. We see him smoking and looking up on the light in the roof, and that light always moves when she you know, hits the floor, you know, to get his attention, and he wishes to be called up again by while he watches that light. But now he's inspired to better himself. Subconsciously, he started to be inspired by her and be lifted up by her. You know, she has helped him. And ultimately, I think that I've said this is a romance, and it obviously is a romantic movie. But ultimately, the theme here is, you know, building a human again. It's the main theme. And there's beautiful, real dialogue saying a lot about honest things about what the relationship is between these two. She probably sends this letter home. I think that's the structure of the scene. And one of the key lines is that there's men you love to be with, but marriage is another matter. Yet you can't be without one another. And that says a lot about what's going on here. There's a letter party scene on Chiang Fat's birthday, and he feels kind of left out at the party, and he says no to a dance with her. He says like, oh, I'll take the next dance, but without revealing anything, there's a development in this scene where he feels left out, but he feels kind of let down too. And And it shows these childish reactions, if you will, for a 33-year-old man. It shows that he's never been in love, as these reactions are very youthful reactions, new reactions. And, you know, he's not had that life learning curve through experience, how you tackle emotions, how you learn to deal with emotions. So he just leaves the party. Despite her clearly paying attention to him, he still feels let down. And it's heartbreaking how certain developments happen without communication in this movie. That you, and we really as humans, we assume too much. Despite having a great track record between each other, we assume the negative. And that's the very real issue here. And I won't spoil any endings. This is not the ending, this party scene. But there are more realizations subsequently in the movie, leading to wonderful quiet moments detailing the connection they do have. And moments are there for you to discover, because I'm convinced you will if you watch this movie, despite these moments not being huge. Moments are subtle, but boy, are they clear. They're perfectly clear, and with emphasis on perfect. I can't say it enough. This is one of the best movies ever made. Additional notes. Other cast members include Jiggy Wong as Mrs. Sherwood, whose daughter Anna Jennifer babysits. Fok Sing as Vincent's new girl Peggy, who was also in Mabel Cheung's New York set debut, The Illegal Immigrant. But mainly I want to give a shout out to Danny Chan as Jennifer's boyfriend, quickly turned ex-boyfriend, Vincent. He was a famous singer, composer and actor. He made a splash as part of the group Warners in the 80s, performed all over the Asia and the world, but retired from music industry in the early 90s, and unfortunately died in October 1993. I think he was like 35 years old, after 17 months in a coma. And speculation why that even happened ranged from that the media or people thought he suffered from alcoholism, took a mix of pills and alcohol leading to a coma due to depression and all of that. And regardless, I mean, I won't speculate because I don't know. It's sad to lose a talent at an early age. It always is. James Heyman's cinematography won a Hong Kong Film Award, and there's a credit for additional cinematography duties by David Chung, who presumably did the brief Hong Kong shoot and maybe some interiors, if some interiors actually was on a set in Hong Kong. David is the director, David Chung, in his own right. He directed the Michelle Yeoh vehicles Royal Warriors and Magnificent Warriors, also the robot action comedy with Choi Hawk Yun Shun. Lam Ching Ying and Salieh, I Love Maria, that was called, and also the great thriller with Bridget Lin and Joey Wong called Web of Deception, aka Deception. Lower Low Score is wonderful. The main two themes that Lowell works in are played via a variety of instruments. You know, it's piano at one point, it's via cello player on the street at one point, and also different instruments take on these moody main pieces in a very, very great way. And in the break, you heard one of the main pieces from the film. Production company for An Autumn's Tale was DMB, a company set up by Dixon Poon, Sammo Hung, and John Shum, and they made several classics before closing down in the early 90s, such as Hong Kong 1941, Dream Lovers, In the Line of Duty 3, even 4, I believe, Tiger Cage, A Bite of Love, which was quite ambitious as it was shot abroad in England, I believe, in Sing Sound and mixed in Dolby, and the Black Cat movies as well, that were very ambitious but ultimately flopped, and they were probably a strong reason why the company closed down in the early 90s. So that's that. That's my discussion of An Autumn's Tale. It's always daunting to take on a favorite movie of yours because you want to do it justice. You want to feel your words come out in a just way because a strong favorite, sometimes you might not get the words out as properly as you want, you know, because you're so enthusiastic about it. But I think this worked out fine. Next time, why not go for the blues out of Choi Hark's filmography? A blues that not many people have seen, you know, it's still underappreciated due to the lack of available English subtitled version. And it's Shanghai Blues, not Peking Opera Blues. I'm not as much of a fan of that movie as compared to other people, but Shanghai Blues is a wonderful movie, and I think that will be the next movie I cover for this little mini series of mine. So I hope you look forward to that. Hope you enjoyed. This has been Podcast on Fire at the Podcast on Fire Network. Website podcastonfire.com. Email for feedback podcastonfire@googlemail.com. The old forum where you can still find members-only archive podcastonfire.com/forum. Check out the bonus episodes that we put up on the website now when we have extra content. Those are website-exclusive episodes, not on iTunes, not on Stitcher. So go to podcastonfire.com for the bonus episodes. Check out our page on Facebook, facebook.com/POF network. Come on in into our discussion group and discuss with us. Search Podcast on Fire Network in the Facebook search bar and you can find a group. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. Follow my writing, sogoodreviews.com, my mini video reviews, sleazykvideo.com, and follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/sogoodreviews. Subscribe to the Podcast on Fire Network on iTunes and leave us a rating and comment if you like the show. We would very much appreciate that. You can also stream us on Stitcher. Go to stitcher.com for the application to your computer or download it from your nearest app store to your tablet or your smartphone. And once you're in Stitcher, type in Podcast on Fire Network and you can add each show individually, including Podcast on Fire. So this has been KDB for yet another favorite Hong Kong movie of mine. So I hope you enjoyed and thank you for listening and see you next time. Bye bye.